welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayen Dangbior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Tuesday, June 12, 2018. A top U.S. official tells Uganda and Kenya to stop the stream of illicit money flowing into those countries from South Sudan.
One of my top priorities, really, as a senior administration official, is holding accountable those who abuse human rights, perpetrate corruption, and undermine democratic ideals of justice and self-determination.
And the head of the former detainee says reunifying the SPLM isn't the priority right now.
What is more important now is to rescue the country, stop the war, and stop the suffering and the suffering of our people.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The U.S. is calling on Uganda and Kenya to stop the flow of corrupt South Sudanese investments in their countries. The U.S. Undersecretary for Terrorism and Financial Intelligence says Ugandan and Kenyan leaders must stop allowing South Sudanese political leaders to buy up property with corrupt proceeds. Maguma Davis Wakarenge reports for VOA from Kampala, Uganda.
U.S. Undersecretary Sigo Mandelka, who's on Working Tower of Africa, told journalists in Kampala Monday evening that the U.S. government has made it clear to Ugandan and Kenyan lawmakers and bankers it is their responsibility to stop corrupt South Sudanese officials from taking illicit funds derived from a 4.5-year conflict and investing it in Ugandan and Kenyan property.
This trip really provides us with an opportunity not only to speak to our government counterparts, but also financial institutions, NGOs, about, in particular, how human rights abusers and others are using the regional and international financial system to hide illicit money. One of my top priorities, really, as a senior administration official, is holding accountable those who abuse human rights, perpetrate corruption, and undermine democratic ideals of justice and self-determination.
Last month, the U.S. government proposed sanctions including asset freezes and travel bans on six top South Sudanese leaders, including ministers accused of blocking the peace process in South Sudan. The U.N. Security Council voted to delay a decision on those sanctions for a month, pending a review of the warring parties' commitment to observe a ceasefire agreement they signed in December last year. The new U.S. ambassador to South Sudan, Tom Hushek, told South Sudan in Focus last week that Washington wants to work with the U.N. to multilateralize those sanctions. Hushek says if Washington does not win the support of the United Nations, the African Union, or regional bloc IGAD, the U.S. may impose unilateral sanctions on the accused South Sudanese leaders. A report released by the U.S.-based Enough Project last year indicates that some South Sudanese leaders have invested ill-gotten wealth in Kampala and Nairobi, among other places. Mandelka says Uganda is under legal obligation to prevent corrupt South Sudanese officials from investing or making financial transactions within the country.
When it comes to South Sudan, for obvious reasons, Uganda is of particular importance to us. We also know that much of the open source reporting indicates that South Sudanese elites are hiding assets and buying property right here in Uganda.
Mandelka is urging South Sudanese two neighbors to utilize sophisticated financial systems to block the flow of the illicit South Sudanese money into Uganda and Kenya.
We're going to continue to pressure them to take the actions that we think that they must take, and really encourage them to sophisticate their systems so that they are able to detect and disrupt the kinds of illicit financial flows that we're seeing. Particularly, it's very important that Uganda send the message that that kind of money is not welcome here.
The U.S. is the largest contributor of humanitarian aid to South Sudan, having spent more than $518 million in the country last year alone. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakalinji in Kampala, Uganda.
A South Sudanese civil society activist living in Uganda is praising U.S. efforts to block the flow of illicit money from South Sudan into Uganda and Kenya. Tito Anthony says most Ugandans or Kenyans believe that South Sudanese have lots of U.S. dollars. And he says that perception affects urban refugees who are not able to find cheap rentals in Nairobi and Kampala.
The move by the U.S. government is in the right direction this time. Because since last year, they have been imposing sanctions, blocking all these financial transactions from U.S. only. It was not effective because the transaction of South Sudan finance and by the senior government official, it's happening within the East Africa bloc or the East Africa region. So since now they have come from the U.S. to lobby the East African country to effect the block of the money flow out of South Sudan, now I think this is the time that the leaders will step back and start to think toward on what can be done so that we achieve peace in the country, because it will now directly affect their daily business. It will affect their life because their children or relatives are in the East African country.
You live in the areas where some of these South Sudanese elite live. Can you bring us up to speed on what you see there? We hear that they live in very big houses, they are driving expensive cars, and they're living in luxury. Is that what you see?
The elite sons and daughters and the families are doing in the East Africa, in Nairobi, in Kampala. It's affect the ordinary South Sudanese who is a refugee in Uganda or who is a refugee in Nairobi, simply because they perceive that all South Sudanese, they have money. But then again, there are some specific category of people who doesn't have money. But because of these elite sons are driving expensive cars, V8, living in luxurious apartment at that side of Kololo, where even the local could not afford to stay there. And this is where actually all the financial transactions move out of South Sudan to these two countries to be expanded that way.
You raised an important issue here. You're saying that the sons of the elite or their lifestyle is creating an impression that South Sudanese are rich, they have a lot of money. How is that image impacting on your interaction with the common Ugandan or Kenyans that you meet?
What happened here? Because of these people, they have spoiled everything. They have V8, they have life, they have dollars, they have everything. And as a South Sudanese, whether you have money or not, or you are riding on a border, or you are driving on a motorcycle, wherever you go, in any shop, you want to buy something, once you are a South Sudanese, the price automatically, they will change, they will multiply. If it is something by you could buy it by 10,000 Ugandan shilling, they will tell you, no, it is a 70,000 value, because they know that you are South Sudanese, and that is because of the life that our ministers bringing money from South Sudan to be spent in Uganda. So a lot of people are suffering because of that.
Looking at the governments in this region, I'm talking about Kenya and Uganda, do you believe that they will prevent the flow of this illicit money from South Sudan?
Well, at some point, yes, they could, because if now it's America who is doing that lobby to do that. Some of them may listen because they want to maintain their relationship with the U.S. They could do that. But some of them, because they don't want to compromise on the economic situation of the country. If you look at the two countries now, the Kampala and the Nairobi, which is Uganda and Kenya, the purely economic is being boosted by the money who are flowing in from South Sudan. Therefore, it's really need a lot of efforts and a lot of work from the U.S. government to convince them to stop the flow of this cash.
That's Tito Anthony, Executive Director of the Center for Peace and Justice. He was speaking with my colleague John Tanza from the Ugandan capital Kampala this past hour. The leader of the SPLM former detainees, who is a signatory to the Arusha Reunification Agreement, says efforts to reunify the various SPLM factions is not a priority while the fighting continues. Pagana Moom told South Sudan in Focus in an exclusive interview in Addis Ababa, the warring parties must first restore peace to create a suitable environment for implementation of the Arusha Agreement. Waki Simon-Wudu has more for VOA from Juba.
Amum says the SPLM former detainees still recognize the Arusha SPLM reunification agreement, but he says that is not the most important thing for South Sudanese right now.
What is more important now is to rescue the country, stop the war, and stop the suffering of our people, so that in an environment of peace, the SPLM leadership and members and cadres can best be able to discuss how best to achieve the reunification of SPLM, how best to return to the vision of SPLM, to the programs of SPLM that has been betrayed and left.
Peter Lamboth is the Secretary for Information, Communication and Culture in the SPLM mainstream, led by President Salva Kiir.
We believe that if the SPLM reunifies before the Addis Ababa process, it will bring peace quicker, because then whatever is happening in Addis will have been addressed already by the SPLM reunification. Number two, we know that the problem in this country, the war was started in the SPLM. It was not started in the Addis Ababa meeting. And so wherever the war starts, it should be where it should be stopped.
Early last month, members of SPLM National Liberation Council held 2 days of meetings in Juba, where party delegates passed a resolution in favor of the reunification of the SPLM factions within 45 days. The 45-day deadline for the various factions to meet in Juba to reunify the party expires next week. Amum says last month's resolution by the SPLM National Liberation Council was not binding because certain factions of the SPLM, like the SPLM in opposition, led by Riek Machar, were not present at the meeting.
How do you reunite when the SPLM in government and the SPLM IO under Dr. Riek Machar reunite when they are fighting a war? It is only logical that they have to stop this war and cease to be enemies, killing themselves, to reunite to become comrades and return to become comrades of one organization called the SPLM, and put all their efforts now to redefine the program of SPLM.
Amum, the former SPLM Secretary General, says Juba is not a good venue for the SPLM factions to meet and freely discuss issues of the party because of insecurity.
We believe that the best environment to reunite the SPLM is an environment of peace in the whole country, and an environment of freedoms, so that we reunite on the basis of discussing our ideas without any intimidation by anybody, and without also resorting to violence.
Lamboth calls Amum's concerns about a meeting in the capital unfounded.
Absolutely nonsense. When they came last time before the Addis Ababa peace was signed in 2015, who killed them here in Juba? Nobody. They were even given parties in the houses of the colleagues of the SPLM. So whatever that is keeping them there is not correct. Why is John Luke here? Why is Madud Biar here? Why nobody kills them?
Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni has been meeting with the leaders of the different SPLM factions in Uganda to convince them to implement the Arusha SPLM reunification agreement. Museveni met with the leaders of SPLM-IO in Uganda in May. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
A senior clergy in South Sudan are welcoming Pope Francis's decision to open a diplomatic mission in Juba. The Archbishop of the Catholic Archdiocese of Juba, Paulino Lokodu Loro, says the Pope has appointed a counselor of the Apostolic Church in South Sudan, which will lead the establishment of a Vatican embassy in the country. Nabil Biagio has this report for VOA from Juba.
Archbishop Loro says the Vatican notified the South Sudan Bishops' Conference last month that Monsignor Mark Kadima has been appointed the counselor of the apostolic nunciature in South Sudan.
This move is from the top leadership of the Catholic Church, how it wants to be of service besides the bishops, the priests, what on the ground. Also the Holy See, the Pope, wants to be of some support to them, that he is present. As we are in South Sudan, he is also here.
Archbishop Loro says the Catholic Church in South Sudan has been in communication with the Pope through Papal Nuncio in Nairobi, Kenya, who is responsible for Kenya and South Sudan. He says appointing a counselor for South Sudan is the Vatican's first step toward establishing a permanent embassy or consulate in the country.
So this man is coming besides supporting this office in Nairobi, he is also going to begin to build the new kind of structure of the presence of the Pope in South Sudan. It is created like this. Slowly, slowly, a priest is sent to be in contact with the government, in contact with the churches, the church leadership, to be in contact with the situation.
Laura says having a Vatican embassy in South Sudan will help the church play a greater role in building peace in South Sudan. He says the Pope hopes to bring the divided nation together by reconciling its warring leaders.
The Pope means to be among us, with us, in our situation as it is. He had wanted to meet Salva Kiir and Dr. Riak. And the Pope had wanted to come to South Sudan last October, last year. Unfortunately, this did not go through. But it is really the presence of the Pope in our country, and I'm sure he would be giving his fatherly advice to the country.
Pope Francis met President Kiir in Uganda last year during the pontiff's visit to East Africa. The archbishop says he hopes having a Vatican embassy in South Sudan will help the Pope to communicate directly with the president and rebel leader Riek Machar about the need for peace in South Sudan.
Thank God our president is a Catholic. And as a Catholic, all of us were under the Pope as our Catholic leader of the world, of course. In this case, the Pope, he can speak to our president. Take care of this war. You are my son and I'm advising you.
Monsignor Kadima is expected to arrive in South Sudan either late this month or next month. Before this appointment, Kadima had been serving as a diplomat in Brazil's apostolic nunciature. The papal nunciature is normally under the apostolic nuncio, who is the Pope's ambassador to a country. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. One farmer in Jonglei State says there is a way to feed more South Sudanese. Find out how when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you follow international politics?
I don't really follow international politics. I only do that when my dad is watching international politics.
Yes, I do follow international politics because they're mostly important. The world in general affects, each country affects the other. So you have to know what is going on around the world.
Yes, of course. Because there is no isolation. This war is happening here in South Sudan. It's a matter of concern to regional countries and to international community as well.
I just live my life, you know. I just wake up every day and thank God for the life, not politics or anything else.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus, and it's time for our Tuesday Health segment. And today we're discussing the incredible impact of children's vaccines. Two vaccines have saved an estimated 1.3 million children's lives so far this century, according to a new study. The vaccines prevent bacterial forms of pneumonia and meningitis. As VOA's Steve Barragona reports, these diseases are now concentrated in a handful of countries.
The bacteria targeted by the shots are known as Hib and pneumococcus. They are major causes of both meningitis and pneumonia. Pneumonia is the leading cause of death among children worldwide. In the last 15 years, donor funding has made vaccines against these bacteria available in many low- and middle-income countries, says Johns Hopkins University epidemiologist Brian Wall.
What was interesting to see was the rate at which some of these deaths have been prevented in the last several years, largely due to an increase in the availability of funding for the introduction of these vaccines in countries with the highest burden.
Writing in the journal The Lancet Global Health, Wall and colleagues estimate that deaths from HIB fell by 90% between 2000 and 2015. That translates to about 1.2 million lives saved. Pneumococcus deaths fell by just over half, accounting for approximately 250,000 lives saved. But Wall says progress has been spotty.
There are a handful of countries that still account for most of the remaining deaths due to these bacteria.
Many of those countries have recently introduced the vaccines, but coverage is uneven. For example, India, which has the largest number of deaths from pneumococcus, just introduced the vaccine in three states in 2017. China has one of the highest death rates from HIB, but has not yet introduced the vaccine. Wall says progress on lowering the global burden of these diseases can speed up if more countries improve vaccine coverage. Steve Barragona, VOA News, Washington.
Amid widespread food insecurity in South Sudan, a Bor County farmer says it is possible to feed all Jonglei State residents. Abel Major produced nearly 4 tons of sorghum from his 12-hectare farm last year. Jonglei officials pledged to reward farmers who harvest food and sell it in local markets. Manyang David Mayar has the details for VOA from Juba.
A 32-year-old Abel Major stands with his hands on his hips, with his elbows turned outward, and watches as his worker drives a rented tractor to cultivate his 14-acre farm a few miles east of Bor town. Major has a bachelor's degree in telecommunications from Kenya's Moi University, but could not find a job for 5 years. That's when, he says, he decided to venture into farming.
I came back home. And life was a bit threatening. That has really made my way to embark on agriculture, since there is a land and the land is very fertile. So that made me to think that agriculture can really help my life as an individual. So it was the issue of self-reliance that took my lead to have my own innovation as an entrepreneur.
Major says he started farming in 2016 with only 40,000 South Sudanese pounds, the equivalent to $1,000 on the black market rate at that time. Major says he has never regretted the decision. He produces enough food to feed his family of six and hence enough money to take care of his family's needs and even put a little away for savings.
Out of 76 bag, 20 were used for the laborers and the home consumption. Currently, I am having 55 bags of sorghum, which the market is very high, and there are some NGO promising us to buy it at the rate of 10,000 pounds, South Sudanese pound.
If the NGOs he is negotiating with agree to buy his sorghum, Major will earn at least 550,000 South Sudanese pounds, which is equivalent to $1,800 on the black market rate. While Major says he is happy that he is able to take care of his family, he wants to see more local people have access to affordable food in the market. He also prefers to spend his time here on the organic loamy soils of Bor, producing food rather than working on Western electronics manufacturers as a telecommunication engineer. Major says he thinks South Sudan relies far too much on other countries for its food.
The farming we are doing, it is going to reduce the issue of importation of food products, especially the sorghum. Now, you can even see last year, the importation of maize flour from Uganda was totally reduced, because now local people are buying this local sorghum in the market. And I am telling you, compare the price of the sorghum and the price of the flour in the market. The sorghum is 5,000 and the flour in the market is 8,000. So which one will you go?
Jonglei State encourages local farmers to produce enough food to feed their families and sell their surplus in local markets. Atongkwal Manyang is Jonglei State Information Minister.
Among these people who are selling their produce, the surplus that they are going to sell to the market, if they produce enough, they are going to get prices. The top people who are producing a lot, they are going to be given some prices by the state. So this is a good thing, and we have to be self-reliant, because it's very important for us to survive.
But Majur acknowledges that farmers like him face enormous challenges.
So I am requesting the state authority to improve on the road so that we, the local farmers, are able to transport our good to the town to meet the market. Number two, we are requesting the state government and the government of South Sudan to prioritize agriculture to the local youth and to the people who are so interested in agriculture, because agriculture is the backbone, as we saw it, to the main countries.
Like Uganda and Kenya, Majur says he wants to see South Sudan leading in agriculture. Aside from sorghum, Majur also produces peanuts and simsim. He is urging more young South Sudanese to take up farming to help fight South Sudan's food insecurity and to make a decent living. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayar in Juba.
And that's our show for this Tuesday. We leave you with the song Polai Polai by Tebley.
Amina mwana mkomori ya zali wa Paris. Matamani ya he Amina ya tsunguwe mwanzani. Lakini sinungizo ntiro Amina wahada. Kulena yengizo ntiro hotunguliwa.
Pole pole ko Amina gojo hunda wanzawo. Pole pole ko Amina gojo hunda mapendo. Pole pole ko Amina kojo honda wanzao. Pole pole ko Amina kojo honda mapendo.
Matamani ya ho Amina ngayo hakini. Adana mila ya rifunga ya hansi ziruaji. Wenda gojo hunda hamani hunde mwazani. Pole pole bo Amina kujana ajabu.
Pole pole bo Amina gojo hunda wanzao. Pole pole bo Amina gojo hunda mapendo. Pole pole bo Amina gojo hunda wanzao. Pole pole bo Amina gojo hunda mapendo.
Amina mwana mkomori ya zali wa Paris. Matamani ya he Amina ya tunguwe mwanzani. Lakini zinungizo ndiro Amina wahada. Kulena yengizo ndiro hotunguliwa.
Pole pole o Amina gojo hunda wanzao. Pole pole o Amina gojo hunda mapendo. Pole pole o Amina gojo hunda wanzao. Pole pole o Amina gojo hunda mapendo. Pole pole o Amina gojo hunda wanzao. Pole pole o Amina gojo hunda mapendo. Pole pole.
We've been listening to Tebley from Comoros with the song Pole Pole. I'm Ayen Dangbior in Washington. Thanks for listening. Let us know what you think about the show. You can find us on the web at southsudan@voanews.com or reach us on Facebook. Our title is South Sudan in Focus. Look for us tomorrow evening on this same station for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.